This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. In 1971, race relations in Durham were strained to the breaking point. The city was dealing with violence brought about by the court-ordered desegregation of schools. Resolution came in the most unlikely way. Two people with limited formal education and vitriolic disdain for each other came together and found an answer. Ann Atwater was a civil rights activist at the time, and C.P. Ellis was grand exalted cyclops of the Ku Klux Klan. And through their struggle to create safer schools, the two built a lifelong friendship. Mark St. Germain's play, Best of Enemies, takes a look at the unlikely relationship between Ann and C.P. to tell a unique story of redemption. And now it's coming to Durham. Joseph Meagle is director of Best of Enemies, and he's with us now. Welcome back, Joseph.
Good to be here.
Always good to have you. Lakeisha Coffey plays Ann Atwater. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And also Derek Ivey, C.P. Ellis. Thanks for being here. Yeah. Thaddeus Edwards is Bill Riddick, and welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
Joseph, to give us the background, but we should, I guess, get the background of the original story, C.P. Ellis and Ann Atwater coming together over this very difficult project in Durham.
Yeah, I think you led into it really well. I think in reaction to these court-ordered desegregation, there was this government desire to create a program, and they looked to Bill Riddick to do that, and he was doing these charrettes, which were these, I guess, community problem-solving, you know, ways of sort of dealing, getting communities, getting stakeholders together, and putting them in small groups and dealing with problems. And he had been doing that successfully, and he was offered this chance to do it in issues of desegregation here or in the South, and he chose Charlotte and he chose Durham for, you know, and he came here and he started looking for the stakeholders that he could bring together. And first he found Ann Atwater, who was a really outspoken, very poor African-American woman. And he needed to find someone sort of on the other side of the political spectrum. And he went as far as he could by finding C.P. Ellis from the Ku Klux Klan. And he brought these two people together in incredible ways. I mean, they certainly resisted wanting to get together, but he sort of manipulated the two of them together and he got them to co-chair the charrette. And
well,
the
Derek,
rest is the play.
Derek, tell us a little, because you're playing the role of C.P. Ellis. You've had to do a little bit of research on him, but also this process of the charrette that Bill Riddick is creating. Tell us a little bit about that, what his ideas were about a charrette, and then how he came to find these two and think that this preposterous union could work.
You want me to tell you what Bill's ideas were?
Yeah.
Well, I researched CP.
Thaddeus, tell me a little bit more about that, about Bill, and because I want to hear about CP. And also, we've got some tape of CP and Ann Atwater and talking about how they both related to the Klan, CP as a Klan member. Mm-hmm. And then, but tell us a little bit more about Bill Riddick.
Well, Bill has training as a social worker. So I think his sort of tactics in putting together the charrettes as he did were coming out of that training and being able to talk to people, being able to get people to sort of strip themselves down to their inner selves or their most raw selves and speak from their own experiences, talk about like what they actually want and ideally to leave out of the room the things that don't need to be there, you know, which were all of those other attachments and associations, so that people can come together to live together and hopefully build together. So that was, sort of his idea in putting the charrettes together the way that he did.
And there's a lot to leave behind. Here's a clip of C.P. Ellis from Diane Bloom's film An Unlikely Friendship and Ann Atwater from an interview by documentarian Alex Manis. C.P. Ellis is remembering the moment he's inducted into the Klan. Ann Atwater's talking about the day the Klan showed up on her lawn.
Now, I will never forget the night that I was initiated into the Klan. I was thrilled to death. And they told me to kneel before the fire cross. I knelt before that cross. I'll never forget that man say, I now bestow upon you the title of Klansman. You'll never be alone anymore. And I was absolutely in tears. I was so happy.
A group of them did come to my house. They stood in front of the house, outside the house,
like scared my children with the guns, you know, drawn up on the shoulder. And my children was going out the door and saw the men out there. They run back in the house and mama, some men out there with guns pointing at the house. I said, y'all stay in here. I'm going to take my gun and I'm going out there and stand. So I took my gun and I had a 16 gauge and I went out on the front and I said, if the first SOB take a step towards me, he belonged to me.
Here we go. That's the real Ann Atwater and the real C.P. Ellis. Their lives and story are put together in a play called Best of Enemies that's on stage at Man Bites Dog Theater in Durham through December 21st. We have actors and the director from the production here with us today. So, Derek, tell us more about C.P.'s background.
Well, C.P. was born and raised in Durham from a very poor background. So his family struggled financially all of his young life. His father died when he was young. So he had to drop out of school and start working. I think he dropped out after eighth grade, is my recollection. And just had a really hard time in life. And he talks, you know, as you just heard, about how grateful he was for that sense of inclusion when he became a member of the Klan, and that's something he'd never had before. He was kind of the epitome of the disenfranchised man. He felt like he had no options. He had no support system, no community, and he has a really great interview with Studs Terkel where he talks about the hate that was inside of him, and it was displaced at first, and he had to find a place to focus that hate, and he found that when he joined the Klan. So, you know, it's a frightening prospect to think about being in that position where he was, but that's kind of where he came from. He found a sense of belonging.
Found a sense of belonging. Yeah. He was poor and poorly educated, didn't finish high school. And Lakeisha, maybe you can describe Anne's character for us.
Well, she was a domestic worker and was very vocal and unapologetic about making changes in her community and earned the respect of some and the fear of others just because of that. But she, you know, pretty much put forth every effort that she could to make sure that everyone in her community was treated fairly.
I mean, it is interesting that both of these characters have really a lot in common. They both are at the margins of their own communities, black and white, and certainly if you're African-American, at the margin of community at large. And their education levels were about the same, right?
Absolutely. It's really interesting because we, unlike many plays we get to do, we had the opportunity to talk to both Anne and Bill Riddick, you know, one-on-one. And Bill just said, like, they were absolutely the same on the opposite sides of the spectrum. He saw them as the same. And as an African-American man, that's sort of surprising to think of it in those terms. But they were just two sides of the same coin. And he just took this remarkable chance of putting them together because it was so public what he was doing. One time he said, you know, any good publicity for desegregation is good publicity. So even if it blew up, he was thinking he was doing something, but I don't think he had any sense it would be quite as successful as it ended up being.
Well, and that tells you just how challenging this mission was. I mean, the idea that this crazy notion is worth trying and has no likelihood of success because that's how desperate the situation was at the time. Would you do a scene for us from the play?
Of course.
Do we need to set this up at all?
This scene is at the first meeting when they've accepted the co-chair positions and they're sort of dealing with the community and sort of dealing with decisions they're making, and it includes all three, Bill, Ann, and CP.
All in favor of Save Our Schools? Put your hands up. All opposed? Well, all right then. Looks like we got ourselves a name, SOS.
That's great. Thank you, Ann. Now we'll hear from our co-chair, C.P. Ellis.
All right, we got a bunch of committees we want you to volunteer for, all of you. In room 201, we got the Student Survey Committee. We want to give one to every kid in our schools, white and black, and get their take on how things are now and how they want them to stay the same. Room 203, Parent Survey, same thing. We want to find out what everybody here wants, not Washington, D.C.
You want to just fill out all the surveys yourself?
What's that mean?
Why don't we wait to find out what people want before you tell them?
That's what we're doing. Room 210's for a committee to look at books used in all our grammar and high schools, white and black, and compare them. Go to 210 and we'll get your names.
Everybody on the high school book committee should have graduated high school.
We didn't vote on that.
We didn't take a vote. Everybody agreed.
Not that I heard.
Then you didn't listen.
You listen now. I didn't go to high school. I had to work after eighth grade. You telling me my opinion doesn't matter?
Mine either. I dropped out in 10th. How's somebody gonna compare high school history books when they never finished high school? Might as well get an opinion of a blind man.
CP.
My boy Larry's blind.
I didn't know.
He's retarded, too. Make sure you tell everybody that.
I told you I had no idea.
Oh, no?
Moving on. We'll be working some long days and nights, so it would be good to have some refreshments when we take a break. Maybe even some entertainment at supper. We should have a committee for that. CP, is there another room available?
Room 103. People can meet there.
Thank you. So if we could have some volunteers for entertainment?
My church choir said they come down and sang.
That'd be nice.
What are we having for white folks?
You got a Klan choir?
I want to put up a Klan exhibit right here for all of you and the kids, too. The history of the KKK.
Mr. Ellis.
Look around here at the bulletin boards in these hallways. You got your Martin Luther King posters and that peanut guy, a bunch of Negroes I never even heard of. I don't see a single white man except Abraham Lincoln. That's not prejudice. You tell me what is.
What do you want to put up? Pictures of men in sheets burning crosses?
Now that's an ignorant thing to say. Which is why you need an education. Latin crosses is a symbol of our faith in Jesus Christ, the light of the world. And our hoods and robes go way back, all the way to the Middle Ages in Europe, where men had secret societies because they wanted their good deeds to be anonymous.
Mr. Ellis, I think that would be counterproductive to what we're trying to do here.
This is still a democracy, isn't it? I say we let everybody here decide.
I say that if I can have my choir, then he can have his Klan exhibit. Let's put it to a vote. All in favor? That's it, then.
There you have a scene from The Best of Enemies on stage now at Man Bites Dog Theater through December 21st. Joseph Meagle, tell us what how you staged the play and how much of this is accurate and how much of it you had to recreate for the stage.
Again, I think it's really strange to sometimes do a play that is out of a history that in the same place you're doing. I mean, it's like it's so present. In fact, we did an event at the Durham Library. I wasn't there, but, you know, people would come up and remember the event, and everyone would like have their own point of view. And even the different interviews we've heard and the book we read that it's based on all have sort of different accounts. So you have all of these sort of angles to deal with. And you feel incredible responsibility, again, especially doing it right here in Durham where it all happened. So I wanted to implicate the audience as being in the experience. And the way Mark St. Germain wrote the play, there's a lot of offstage characters. These four characters in the play are always talking to people who are not on stage. So we use the audience and we basically make it their story and sort of try to make it as inclusive as this is. Even though it's 1971, it's still here. And it's still about us.
Well, Thaddeus, I know that your character, Bill Riddick, is changed somewhat from the real Bill Riddick in terms of the actual details of his family and that sort of thing, and also the trajectory of his journey through the process, what he thought he was doing when he started and how he changed throughout the process. Tell us a little bit about that and then how you approach the character.
Oh, absolutely. So the Bill, the character in the play, is pretty different from Bill, the man. In one way that feels really important to me, and that was what his evenings were like, you know, after the charrette, like what he went home to, what his home life was like. In the play, Bill is engaged to his wife, and you know they get married in this sort of time jump. In real life, Bill was already married. They already his kids had already been born, so he was allowed to sort of decompress at the end of the day by just going home to, you know, take care of the kids and change diapers and that sort of thing. So it was very important for me to understand without that in place, what then does the character Bill have? You know, like how does he get to decompress? Like, you know, what are his days like? What is his support system like around the end of the day? So understanding the difference between the fictional Bill and the real Bill was very important to allow me to understand what sort of energy he's bringing into the scene, like what he leaves with, where he thinks he's going. But also to free me up from the responsibility of feeling like I have to sort of honor this real person, you know, who's sitting 10 feet away from me.
But well, I want to talk more about that. But it's a tough job because he's somebody who had a mission, right, and a goal.
Absolutely.
So in a sense, we can say, well, he knew where he was going, but he didn't.
He had to change over
time, too. And that's a tough role to kind of, I think, project to an audience. That mm-hmm. a change takes place in a guy who thinks he knows where he's going from the start.
I think that's one of the great things about him, on the page, but also in real life, is that he had a good deal of training and he was pretty experienced, but he was still young enough that he thought he could do anything. He thought he was invincible. He could go out, you know, and make these changes happen. The great thing is that he was right about that, but he actually didn't. He had no evidence for that, you know, at the time. You know, he was young enough to not know any better.
And he didn't do it. I mean, he was a catalyst, but it turns mm-hmm. out other people and the sincere effort of people who came together. So,
yes.
Derek, what's it like? You met C.P. Ellis's children, right? And so what's that like to play their father?
Ah, boy, terrifying. Mm-hmm. I was really grateful to meet them. C.P. passed away several years ago, so there was no way I could meet him. But, boy, to portray the parent of anyone's parent, you know, is daunting. But their big emphasis was that he was a real man. You know, there's nothing like meeting someone's kids to put them in perspective. You know, the same thing Thaddeus just mentioned. He went home, you know, to his family at night. He didn't bring all of this turmoil and hate that was going on in his daily life into his house at home. They were barely aware that it was going on. They missed their father, you know. And he also had a huge change throughout his life. This play deals with one of the darker periods of his life and one of the less flattering periods of his life. And they remember the man who he became, you know, and who he changed into.
And he certainly did. If we haven't said it, he renounced all of that and came to a whole new understanding
of
himself with regard to race. Lakeisha Ann Atwater is still with us. Have you met her? And what's it like to, again, portray this now living legend in the city of Durham?
I did get a chance to meet her before we actually put the production on. And we talked for a little while about how she felt during that time. And it's not surprising to see that the Anne that's on paper is still the Anne that we have today. She's still outspoken. She still means what she says and is steadfast. She still has a lot of the strong beliefs that she had, you know, way back when. She got a chance to see the production and she enjoyed it. And so I'm fulfilled.
I also think she changed. I mean, all these characters change, and the play really sort of covers that. And she sort of got much more connected to her own spirituality, and realizing that how much anger she had and how that anger was sort of exhibiting itself. So I think that all of these characters go through extraordinary change in the course of this play.
Mm-hmm. The fascinating thing, and I think the relevance of this play for now, is the idea that we actually put folks together and allow them to work out all these things and say their horrible racist things to each other and then make the change. Because I think, Joseph, and I don't know how you feel about it, we're not living in that world today. We're all siloed and pretending everything is okay.
Bill makes that point at the very end of the play,
I
think.
He does indeed.
I think he says, you know, we said what we meant. And that there was an advantage to that because we could now know where everyone stood. We could know who our enemies were. We could know what we needed to work out. By keeping it inside in sort of encoded language, it becomes much more difficult to really wrestle with the monster in the room.
Well, I appreciate you doing this. Thank you so much for taking the time to share it with us. Joseph Meagel is the director of Best of Enemies. Lakeisha Coffey plays Ann Atwater. Derek Ivey is C.P. Ellis. Thaddeus Edwards is Bill Riddick. Best of Enemies on stage at Man Bites Dog Theater in Durham until December 21st. And for more information, you can go to our website, stateofthings.org. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
Coming up next, a columnist of the Statesville Record Landmark tells stories of his hometown. Stay with us.